Army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
And good morning, and thank you for joining me today. It's the Cooking Corner, and we have almost an hour, just under, to share quite a few topics. So let's get started with my first. So over the past few weeks, I've been helping with the Shabbos Project team with some recipes from all over the world for their Shabbos Project blog. And so it's been quite exciting actually going through, you know, all those books that sit on your shelf and sort of say, hello, when are you going to open me and use me? Well, I've been using them. So I caught up on some of the old recipes that I always used to enjoyed cooking with. And if we have time, please God, I'll be able to share them with you. But an exciting part of the show is going to be my interview with Lizzie Mulder, who is the chef and the owner of Ilda Pie. And I'm sure a lot of you know about Ilda Pie. It's a restaurant in Neisner that a lot of people go to when they go on holiday to Plett. But I'll be sharing, thank God she's written a wonderful new book, so I'll be able to share the kosher version with you. And we'll also be, I'll try and include some of the recipes that I've been reading up on in the last few weeks, your tomatolengi and the Beef Contessa, and hopefully they'll be submitting some of their wonderful recipes towards the Shabbos Project. We're also gearing up and getting ready. I think it's only 6.5 weeks left till Rosh Hashanah. So I want to try and include some of the wonderful Rosh Hashanah recipes, something nice and sweet. And with the 9 days behind us, we can really get stuck into our meaty dishes now. I have to admit, thank God for Angelica's bean and barley soup, because that really helped me over this period. Because I just get, my mind just sort of says, milkshakes. I don't even have enough plates. I don't even have enough pots to make milkshakes. What am I going to do? Anyway, so nothing like a good old steak tonight. Perhaps a hamburger, but we'll see about that just now. But before we get on to some of those wonderful recipes, I have to share a burger recipe. And this is something that I made yesterday. It is the pure beef burgers, which is easily available for most of us because we only use pure beef, from Lizzie Mulder's book, Anytime, Ilda Pine's famous recipes. And here goes with her recipe for pure beef burgers. You will need 1 tablespoon of vegetable oil. Now, this makes about 6 burger patties. 1 tablespoon vegetable oil, 1 cup chopped onions, 1/2 teaspoon of chopped garlic, 1 teaspoon paprika, 1 tablespoon ground cumin, 1 teaspoon salt, 1/2 teaspoon of crushed black pepper, and 1.2 kilos of beef mince. I like to go for the coarse ground beef mince because it sort of aerates the patty. And it makes it a lot lighter. 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh parsley. 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh marjoram. Or you can use a teaspoon of the dried one. And then, of course, you can buy your lovely hamburger buns. You can use whatever trimmings you want, whether it's fried onions, lettuce, tomato, etc. So what we do is we heat the oil, our 1 tablespoon of vegetable oil, in a frying pan over medium heat, and we cook the onion until it turns a lovely light golden brown. So it's that really caramelized look and taste. And then we add the garlic, paprika, cumin, and you cook it for about another 2 or 3 minutes to bring out that beautiful aroma of all the spices. And you add the salt and pepper, and then you allow that mixture to cool. Combine the mince, fresh herbs, and cooled onion mixture in a big bowl and mix by hand until well blended. Now, just make sure that you don't over blend these or over mix them, because you want to keep them light and aerated. And then you shape them into 200 gram patties or to the size that you want. And, you know, make them up about an hour before, she says, an hour before you plan on grilling them or popping them onto a flat grill or onto the braai. Remember I said last week how, or it was the week before, sorry, how in America at Amsterdam Burgers, they like to fry their mince patties on a flat grid, on a flat iron grid, so that you can get that caramelized flavor coming through and really browning it on both sides. So once you've mixed this all together, then, as I say, handle your patties with care. Chill them for a little bit until they get, you know, a little firm. And then you braai them, or you put them into a cast iron pan, and you serve them on either a homemade bun with your favorite sauces and trimmings, or you can buy some nice buns. We have some wonderful bakers in this town, so we can buy some nice burger buns. And that's something to think about tonight. So you can have your beautiful burgers tonight. And what I'm going to be doing for the rest of the show is I'm going to be chatting to Lizzie, who's actually out here in Johannesburg, and she's going to share some of her amazing recipes with us. And when we get back after the break, we'll be chatting to Lizzie.
Army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Lizzie, thank you so much for joining me. It's wonderful.
Thanks for having me. Good
wonderful
morning.
Are you literally at the airport?
No, we're actually still in Ida on the way to the airport. So we've had a lot of things to pack up this morning, so...
Okay, great. Because you're coming to Johannesburg from Nasna to do first of all, for the launch of your amazing book.
Yes.
And let me tell the listeners a little bit about Lizzie. Lizzie, together with her husband Marcus, run the famous Ilde Pie restaurant. I hope I've spelled that correctly.
You got it right.
Okay, good. But my daughter said, Ma, it's pronounced Ilde Pie, not Ilde Pain. And you're from the famous Ilde Pie in Nisna, which everybody goes mad for. And I've heard about is this famous restaurant. In fact, I went to visit it when I was in Plett last year just to see what it was all about. Bought myself a beautiful plastic apron and a couple of wooden things. And this is your playground. This is where you spend most of your day eating, chatting to family and friends, and just sharing what they love to do. And you know what I love about recipe books like this? You see, you know, being kosher, what I love about famous non-kosher restaurants is when they bring out recipe books. And so I can finally make it and taste it and actually get to experience, obviously it's not as good as yours, but get to experience what everybody's been raving about.
And, well, I'm glad.
And in your first book, Cafe Food, which you wrote, Lizzie, you said, to share my passion for food and illustrate that marvelous dishes can be made at home and by anybody, just rings so true in this next book of yours, which is called Anytime.
Yeah.
And what a wonderful title for this, because you basically chapterize it or, you know, into times of the day.
That's right.
Okay. So, if, for example, instead of breakfast, lunch and supper, you do, let me check in the book here, you do around 8, around noon, around 6, sweet time. And what made you do that?
Yeah. So, like you said, the first and the second book are mostly recipes that we have done in the restaurant and that are currently on the menu. And a lot of the recipes come from friends and family and also from our travels.
Yes.
So in the second book, I took all those recipes that we've accumulated over the last couple of years and put it into a book format that is, like you said, accessible for the food enthusiast and for those people who come and eat here and then want to make what they had at home. So when I put all the chapters together, I actually realized that most of the recipes, you know, could be served sort of around the clock. They don't normally fit in, they didn't fit into the normal sort of chapters that you would normally find in a recipe book. So, because the restaurant opens at 8 and then we switch over to lunch at around 11:30 noon and we close at 3, I thought, well, why don't we sort of divide the chapters in the times of the day, and the bakers start at midnight, so we sort of, that's how it sort of came about, so that the recipes can be made sort of throughout the day, not at a very specific time, but sort of just fits into whenever you feel hungry.
Yeah, because I'm sure it is eating at odd hours, because sometimes not at all.
Yeah, so that's actually for us as well, you know, we of course, because we're here all day, we spend, you know, we eat at least two meal times here, and it's not always specifically at 8 or at 1 or whenever it is that we think is the appropriate breakfast or lunchtime, but we kind of eat when you have time.
Yes.
And sometimes not at all.
I'm sure. Take us through Lizzie's day, just a day in the life of Lizzie at Ilse
Well,
Park.
since we've reopened almost a year and a half ago.
Okay,
let's
go a little bit back on that. And
back.
When you say we reopened, what actually happened that you...
So we opened the original Ile de Pins in 2002 on this very spot, but it burned down in 2015. And then we sort of took a step back and thought, sure, you know, what do we want to do? How do we want to do it? And then when we finally decided now that we still wanted to go for it, everything was demolished and we basically started building up from ground zero again. So we completely changed the design into something a lot lighter and more airy and spacious, and sort of designed the ultimate flow for us, for our restaurant. So we opened in November 2016. We opened what we call Ile de Pins 2.0.
Okay.
So we've been open now for just over a year and a half. And yeah, since when we reopened, we also sort of had time to reflect a little bit on the last 16 years. And we've also grown not only in age, but in wisdom, I would hope,
well,
in the
sure.
last 16 years. And we thought, you know, we were going to take this opportunity to rethink also, like, how do we run the business and what we want to get out of it, lifestyle-wise. So
right.
We softened the working hours a bit for everyone. We're closing 2 days a week instead of only 1 day a week, which gives us a Sunday off as well, because we normally come in and work on a Monday anyway. So my day now, as opposed to before, starts at around 7 when all the staff come in and we set up and get ready for opening time at 8. Yeah, and then I'm sort of, my new role is sort of more general manager, so I see to the day-to-day operations of the restaurant, and obviously my passion being the hot kitchen. I pop in and out of the kitchen and sort of make sure that the daily flow of business is good throughout the day. Marcus takes care of the pastry and the baking, and he's also the office person, because I hate admin.
So who's the chef? Who's the chef in the family?
I'm the chef, and
yes.
I'm the kitchen. The kitchen is my baby, and Marcus is the pâtissier. So he takes care of the pastries, all the beautiful cakes and the breads.
Yes,
so we have very specific duties. Yeah, we divide it up so that we have specific duty so that we stay out of each other's hair during the day.
I love the way you say around 8 when you start your chapter. You say, Ile de Pie comes alive in the early morning. A buzz of excitement fills the air. Everyone is diligently cooking, baking, cleaning, and putting things in just the right place to create order. At 8 o'clock, the bell rings. The music starts playing and the doors open, inviting you to celebrate breakfast or brunch at the time of day when energy is at its most vibrant in the cafe. This chapter is all about my favorite breakfast recipes from around the world, and I'm going to be sharing a lot of those recipes with the listeners when, you know, as the interview goes along. So you were saying that you're also the chef. Did you have any formal training to become a chef?
Yes.
Or you did? Okay.
Yes, I went to America in 1998 to study. I did a two-year associate degree in culinary arts.
Yes.
And then I worked in America for about 7 years in restaurants and bakeries, and obviously that's where I met Marcus.
Yeah.
And then in 2002, we came back to South Africa to open Ile de Pie. Yeah, so we both are professionally trained chefs.
And the philosophy behind Ile de Pie, what would you say it is?
Yeah, I think it's grown over the years. When we first opened in 2002, you know, it was both of our first ventures. So we originally started out just wanting to have this beautiful little corner bakery cafe. And, you know, we started with 5 or 6 staff, and that grew over the years. And as we grew, you know, with our staff changing, but not really the concept, but our philosophy grew in terms of, you know, what we wanted to get from the restaurant and as our style and ethos developed.
Yes.
And I would say at the moment it's more for us, it's a lot more about just running a restaurant. It's about creating a space where people can come together to feel nourished, not only by food but spiritually, if I can put it that way. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time training our staff and developing ourselves you know, on more just the basic skills needed to run a restaurant, but everything else that's almost intangible. Mm. Yeah, to create a space where people feel the energy, the beautiful energy, and like I said, to come to be nourished with
yes.
people taking care of them, and not only with food, but with other things as well. And that's when you mentioned about, you know, when we open at 8 in the morning, that beautiful bell that we ring at
yes.
8 o'clock is a beautiful Tibetan bell that we ring as a sort of almost like a, yeah, no, I wouldn't
come
say like
to
a
the play, table.
But as a, yes, it's like a, it's like for everybody just to stand still for a minute and
yes.
take a few deep breaths before we, you know, reflect and start the day. So, yeah it's
where,
more about.
Where do you source most of your ingredients from? Do you have a little hidden farmyard at the back?
Yeah, it's we have a lot of beautiful small producers in and around Knysna, you know,
right.
between Plek and George.
Yes.
And we actually try to get ingredients from various places in the area, because the challenge is with the smaller farmers around this in this area. Where the demand gets so high over season,
mm-hmm.
we can't just rely on one place to supply us with the necessary ingredients. So
right.
we support various little farmers in the area. And, yeah, here and there, things come, I'm sure, from Cape Town via local suppliers or from
yes.
Joburg even. But we don't really import anything. We use local flour. Yeah, we try to use as much local stuff as possible.
Now, talking about flour, you said we use, you know, local flours and whatever. Successful bread baking, which is part and parcel of your business, okay, share some tips with us. I know that you do the 3T, you have the 3T philosophy with breads. Share a little bit of your experiences with breads and some tips for your magnificent breads.
So we have in the book, we are the mostly cooking recipes, obviously, and then we have one chapter that's on breads that we sort of pair with most of the dishes that we serve in the restaurant. And yes, obviously Marcus is the expert on the bread, although when we started we both were in the bakery and trained bakers as well, but that's sort of his forte. And with bread, it's you know, sort of similar to cooking. It's just a little bit more, I would say, precise, and it's the timing that's yes, in the type of bread that we make that gives it the special flavor and taste, because it has a very long fermentation. Obviously, it starts with the flour, so we get the best possible flour to start with, and then it's the four basic ingredients with lots of time and fermentation.
Teas. Your temperature, and taste. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, these are critical.
Yeah, so those are the
bread.
Three basic, yes, basic things that bring out the best in the end product.
Do you use a starter in any of your breads?
We have which we call a mother. So it's, yes, a sourdough starter that just keeps on going and going and going. It's like a little baby that you feed every day.
What is and a starter? How do you make the starter for those who don't know what a starter is all about?
A sourdough starter is basically a wild yeast. So it's just flour and water,
yes,
that you mix, and it picks up wild yeast from the air. Some, yes, people use a little bit of an aid to get the starter going. They use anything from grapes to potatoes, raisins, all kinds of things to sort of, I don't think it really adds that, it's not that it adds flavor, it's just an added thing to get the starter moving.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So our starter is obviously quite old, because even during the fire,
yes,
we kept on feeding
save and feed it. Wow. How many years you start with
flour and water, and it takes about 2 weeks to develop the starter.
Yes.
And then the main thing is just to keep it healthy. So every day you pinch off a little bit. It's like a sticky dough.
Yes.
So when it's ripe, you use it about 30% of the total flour, weight of the flour percentage-wise,
yes,
and then you pinch off a little bit that you use and then feed for the next day.
Ah, fantastic. And apparently people have names for theirs, and they call it by different names. And
exactly.
Yeah. My son met somebody who's had hers going for about 9 years now.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, it develops beautiful aroma and a robustness that adds to the flavor of the bread.
Now, if you're sitting down at Il de Pai, what is your favorite meal? What is the first meal you go to? Ah, put you on the spot now.
That is you putting me on the spot. Yes, I would have to say just a plain croissant. I think that's my biggest vice. I struggle the most resisting that.
Oh, really? Okay, well.
Yeah.
I know that you are extremely busy, that you're about to catch a flight, so I will leave,
yes,
you, and hopefully I will see you in Johannesburg at the launch of your,
yes,
wonderful new book, and I will be sharing some recipes on the radio. And thank you so much, Lizzie, for joining us. It's really
thank you,
wonderful.
Yeah, and I'll be at the Milay Kitchen for two events tomorrow morning and tomorrow evening.
Okay.
In Bryanston.
And if anybody wants to buy the book anytime, we can get it at any good bookstore.
Major retailers online,
yes,
or from us, obviously. At
fantastic.
The restaurant.
And if somebody would like to contact you, she's having problems with her
absolutely,
mother.
Absolutely. Email, Facebook, anything. I've just had somebody contact me last night. Yeah.
Yeah. What is your email address, Lizzie?
It's Lizzie@ildepain.co.za. That's right.
Great. Okay, thank you so much, Lizzie, and I will share some of your wonderful recipes.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie at Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and I'm sharing some wonderful recipes with you from Lisi Mulder's new book, Anytime. And I'm sure some of you have been to her restaurant. For those who haven't, aren't we lucky that she is sharing all these beautiful recipes with us? So us kosher kids can actually share the experiences that some of our other friends have had at Elder Pie. So Lisi writes so beautifully, and she really gets involved in her recipes. And you can actually feel that passion. I mean, even if it's for a simple smoothie. Okay, so she calls this one her PB&J Superfood Smoothie. So we're going to talk a little bit about breakfast recipes and just healthy things at the moment, because we're all on a health run, aren't we? So she says, in 2009, I enrolled in a yoga teacher's training course in Bali, which turned out to be a pivotal point in my life. It was mentally and physically demanding, but spiritually transformational. It changed the way I look at life and prompted me to reevaluate the way I approach food and cooking. We followed a strict raw vegan diet for a month. Oy, shame. Okay, but for those vegan friends out there, to my surprise, the food was creative, fresh, unique, and delicious. For breakfast, we had the most amazing variety of exotic fruits, nut yogurts, and superfood smoothies, packed with vitamins, minerals, and protein. Since then, we always have at least two superfood smoothies on the cafe menu. And this one is my summertime favorite. I call it a PB&J because the flavor brings back memories of the American peanut butter and jelly sandwiches I ate as a kid. PB&J Superfood Smoothie. Okay, so this makes three glasses, and this is all you have to do. You have to take 2 cups of cold water and 1/2 cup of raw almonds soaked overnight. For the smoothie, you will need 1.5 cups of almond milk, 1/2 cup of apple juice, 1 big banana, 1.5 cups blueberries, 1/2 teaspoon of hemp powder, which you can get at your favorite health store, 1 tablespoon of hemp seeds, 1/2 tablespoon of chia seeds, 1/2 tablespoon of cocoa powder, 1 tablespoon of cocoa nibs, 1.5 tablespoons peanut butter or any other nut butter. I mean, you can get cashew nut butter, you can almond butter, hazelnut butter, and 1.5 tablespoons of honey. So to make the almond milk, what you do is you blend the water and the nuts on high speed in a good quality blender for about 1 minute. Then you strain it through a nut milk bag or a double layer of cheesecloth. I just put mine through a muslin cloth to extract the milk. And then I squeezed it, and then I set the pulp aside for another use. So you can actually use the pulp. You can use it for the seed and nut cracker recipe, the gluten-free one that I actually gave to you. I think it was about a month ago, but I can give it to you again. And then you strain. So we've strained that all through. We put the pulp aside and we place all the smoothie ingredients into the jug of a blender, cover, and blend at high speed for about 20 seconds or until smooth. And then you scrape the sides down occasionally if necessary, and you serve it chilled. Now, just a few tips, and this is what Lisi's so good at, her tips. A few tips on nut milks. Firstly, you want to use raw, unseasoned nuts that are fresh, not stale or rancid. So smell them first. Make sure that you buy it from a reputable store where they're always changing stock all the time, new stock coming in. And you can use almost any nut. I mean, some people like macadamia, some like pecans. And she actually says that pecans are easier to blend and result in a richer, creamier milk. And then soaking is very important, as it saturates the nuts and not only yields more liquid, but results in a smoother, creamier milk, leaving less pulp behind. Soaking also activates the enzymes, which makes them easier to absorb and the milk more nourishing. The ratio for nut milk is 4 parts water to 1 part nuts, and depending on how rich a milk you require. And the longer the nuts are soaked, preferably overnight, the more milk you get. So she uses a Vitamix blender, and because apparently it chops anything from ice to meat, and is especially good for making nut milk, as it minces the nuts really fine to extract more milk and leaves a super fine nut pulp behind. But a good quality blender will also work. But maybe not deliver exactly as she says, but it will work. And what's so wonderful about this is that, guess what? It's all Parv. How's that? So that's an exciting breakfast booster to get you on your way. And then, of course, was one of my all-time favorites, is the baked yogurt with fresh berries. She says on her last trip to India, she stayed on a coconut plantation in Kerala, a family farm with 4 beautiful villas only accessible by boat. 3 generations lived in the main house, and the grandmother did all the cooking and offered a cooking class during our stay. Every meal was an experience. On our last day, we had a traditional tart for dessert, kind of like a milk tart, but with no eggs. And after 2 helpings, we had to ask for the recipe. When we got back home, we adapted the recipe into a breakfast dish, as well as delightfully delicate dessert with fresh berries, which are in another chapter. But in the meantime, let me give you this wonderful baked yogurt with fresh berries recipe, which you can have for breakfast. So you will need 2 cups of fresh cream, 2 cups double cream Greek yogurt, which is available from Woolworths, 1 cup of condensed milk, 3 fresh granadillas, and 1 cup of fresh raspberries, but I prefer to use strawberries or blueberries. You mix the cream, yogurt, and condensed milk together and stir it until it is smooth. You divide evenly amongst ramekins. You divide that mixture evenly amongst the ramekins, and you bake in a preheated oven at 140 degrees Celsius for about 10 minutes. Then you remove from the oven and leave to cool at room temperature, or you can refrigerate it later once it's cool to room temperature. And then to serve it, scoop out pulp of 1/2 granadilla onto each baked yogurt and finish with a generous scoop of your favorite berries. Then, her little tip, keep the leftovers in the fridge, and this can last up to 5 days, and serve it as a light and refreshing dessert. You can almost use any fruit as a topping.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie at Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
I mean, we're talking about all these delicious, sweet, condensed milk yogurts, and what would we be without the occasional sweet indulgence? I mean, we have to, and especially with Rosh Hashanah coming up, it's, I always say, it's my time for sweetness. So, I mean, whether it's a chocolate mousse or a beautiful flaky croissant or just something with honey and something really syrupy and sweet, there's always something that we can make on Rosh Hashanah to satisfy this sweet craving. And I know that a lot of people like to make lekach, which is honey cake. And I decided I think I should share her banana bread recipe. A lot of people have said to me it's absolutely wonderful. If only you could get the recipe. Well, guess what? We can get the recipe. And we have it here. It's banana bread. And as Lizzie says, she says you have to have at least one quick bread in your baking repertoire. One that can be served as a breakfast pastry or simply a dessert. And who doesn't like banana bread? Everyone in my family does. And it's the other thing I bake on Sundays when I'm not making blueberry pancakes or scones. So here's the thing about bananas. They have to be very ripe. Yes, pretty much black all over and soft. And that's what gives banana bread that dark, earthy, real banana flavor. So sorry to my husband, Ian, because he doesn't eat bananas, but the rest of the family do. So I'm going to give you this lovely recipe. You will need about 125 grams. I think it's about half a cup of, if we're going to make it pyrove, you'll use a pyrove margarine, or you can use unsalted butter. And make sure that it's at room temperature, as it's easier to beat. You'll need 1 cup of dark brown sugar, that lovely soft muscovado sugar, 2 large eggs, and about 4 big, very ripe. You know the ones that the children say, "Mart, can you get rid of these bananas?" Those are the ones that you want to use. You'll also need 1/4 cup of sour cream. If you're going to make it pyrove, then just use 1/4 cup of non-dairy creamer, and you put about 1/2 teaspoon of lemon juice in it. You'll also need 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract and about 210 grams, which is about 1 2/3 of a cup of cake flour, 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 1/2 cup of toasted walnuts. Okay, if you're allergic to nuts, then leave the nuts out, but they should be toasted because it just gives that extra crunch to the beautiful banana bread. So what we do is we preheat the oven to 145 degrees centigrade and then Celsius, and then we cream the butter and the sugar until light and fluffy using an electric mixer, and just beat that for about 3 minutes. And then on medium speed, you add the eggs 1 at a time until it's really well combined. Scrape the sides down and make sure that it's nicely combined with the eggs. And then you mash the bananas with a little bit of the sour cream or Oily Whip and lemon juice and vanilla. And you mash that in a separate bowl. It will be quite easy to mash the bananas because they really will be lovely and soft if they're dark and black. And then you add the banana mixture to the egg mixture and you beat that for about 1/2 minute, I'd say. And then you sift the flour, the baking soda, and the salt together into a bowl, and you fold into the wet ingredients on low speed, scraping the sides down again, and be careful not to overmix because it should only take about 1 minute of that mixing. And then you fold in the walnuts. Now, to toast the walnuts, you can either dry fry them in a pan or you can roast them in the oven. Add those crushed walnuts and transfer the batter into a silicone loaf pan or a greased metal pan. And you bake that for about 35 minutes. You can rotate it if necessary, but I would only rotate it after about 25 minutes. And it's ready when the top cracks and the bread starts to pull away from the sides of the tin. And then you remove it from the oven and you let it cool in the loaf pan. I would say no more than 5 minutes before unmolding it onto a wire rack to cool completely. That doesn't sound delicious, and if that doesn't make you want to quickly get home and make banana bread, then I don't know what.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
So if you remember, I gave you that wonderful recipe for the burger so that you could all eat your burgers tonight. And what I did was I made her good old barbecue sauce to have with the burgers. She says when she was 9 years old, her family moved to America. And we lived in Texas for 3 years while my parents completed postgraduate degrees. We traveled around the southern states quite a bit. And one of my fondest memories is a real good old southern style barbecue with coleslaw and cornbread. But I especially loved the barbecue sauce. It is one thing that I always have in the pantry now, and it works with chicken, ribs, beef burgers, and pulled beef. And this is our family recipe. So for this wonderful, and I must admit, I go with her on this beautiful Texas barbecue sauce because, you know, I've had family in Dallas and we always try new and exciting recipes. And there's something about the Texas barbecue sauce that is just so delicious. So here is a recipe that you can serve on just about everything. So whether it's brisket, whether no matter what it is, you just pour it over your meat and you'll have this wonderful tasting meat. So it's 1.5 tablespoons of vegetable oil, 1.5 cups of chopped onions, finely chopped, 1/2 tablespoon of chopped garlic, 1/2 tablespoon of chopped ginger, all fresh and lovely, 2 cups of tomato puree. Remember, it's not the paste, it's the puree. 1 tablespoon soy sauce, 1/2 tablespoon of tamari. If you don't have tamari, don't worry, it didn't make that much of a difference. It was still delicious. 1.5 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce, 1 tablespoon of apricot jam, 1/4 cup of apple cider vinegar, 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 2 teaspoons smoked paprika, 1/2 teaspoon chili flakes, 1 teaspoon mustard powder, and 2 teaspoons of ground cinnamon. And that does work. The 2 teaspoons of ground cinnamon, you think to yourself, is this going to taste like bulkers or is it going to taste like brisket? It does taste delicious. So what you need to do is you heat the oil in a wide-based saucepan over medium heat, and you cook and stir the onion until it's see-through. Then you add the garlic and the ginger, and you cook for another minute. You stir in the tomato puree, the sauces, the jam, the vinegar, the sugar, and the spices, and you cook on a low heat for about 20 minutes. You remove this from the heat and use it immediately, or you can refrigerate it for up to a week. So I made some, and I've kept half for Friday night, and I'm going to put it over my brisket. I can't wait to be having pulled brisket this Friday night. And this sauce can be, she says, can be stored for longer in your pantry if you decant it into a sterilized jar and boil it. Okay? So boil it first, and then you can sort of decant it, but I don't think there'll be much left because it is absolutely delicious. And another quick recipe is her sticky sauce. Okay, now this is not a from-scratch recipe, but it is super easy to make, and it's pretty darn good. And her nephew Max loves spicy chicken wings, and little boys are always hungry. So she came up with a few quick and yummy recipes, and this is Max's favorite. It's made from a few things that she always has in her pantry. Well, okay, nearly always has in her pantry. Okay, so we're going to make 2 cups of sticky sauce. So if you're going to have chicken this week or Shabbos, this is a great sauce to go over that chicken. You'll need 1/2 cup of balsamic vinegar, 1/2 cup of pomegranate syrup, which is available at most supermarkets. Otherwise, you just take pomegranate juice and you just boil it until it forms pomegranate syrup. That means you reduce it until it thickens and evaporates, and you'll get a pomegranate syrup. You'll need 2 tablespoons of sriracha sauce, 1 teaspoon whole grain mustard, 1/2 a cup of tomato sauce, ketchup as it's known overseas, 1/4 of a teaspoon of chopped garlic, 2 tablespoons soy sauce, 1 tablespoon of hoisin sauce, 2 tablespoons of fish sauce, but we can't put fish sauce in, so it's fine to leave it out. Unless, of course, you're going to use it over fish, then you can add the fish sauce. But without the fish sauce, it was still absolutely delicious. And all you do is do all the ingredients together to blend it well. Add a little bit of salt and pepper just to season it for taste. And I would use it straight away. You can put it in the fridge if you want to. And it keeps just like a chutney or a marmalade would keep. And you just spread, it's delicious over chicken, and you just spread it on the pieces. You can also spread it on meatballs. You can put it on to burgers as well. And it's a lot of fun. So there you have some lovely sauces for anything. And after the break, I'm going to come back with her Kitka recipe.
Army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and I have been chatting to Lizzie Mulder of Ildapine, and she has just brought out this wonderful book, and I'm just so excited to share all her recipes. And as I said, thanked her so much because some of us just can't get to these restaurants that everybody goes mad for. And so at least we've had an opportunity to experience her recipes and share in her recipes so that we can make them in our kitchens. So this is her challah, or as she says, challah or kitka, as it's known in South Africa, features in many cultures as a bread for holidays and festivities. In the Jewish culture, it also ushers in the weekly Shabbat, the day of rest, contemplation, and being with the family. The woven braids resemble interconnected arms which beautifully speak of community, family, and sharing. We use olive oil in our recipe to celebrate the Mediterranean and honor the tradition of not using any dairy product in the dough. But you can replace the water with a little bit of scalded milk if you want to, and which makes it more like a French plat. Or you can exchange the olive oil for butter. So if you're going the milk route and you're going to sprinkle it with a little bit of feta and some onions and you want to go that route, you can, and instead of the oil, you can have the butter, and there's just so many different options, she says, exploring this wonderful recipe all over the world. So her recipe that she has shared with us is as follows. It makes 3, and you will need 500 grams of cake flour, sifted, of course, 8 grams of instant dry yeast. So that would probably be the ones, the rapid rising ones in the green or the purple packets. 160 grams of water. 40 grams of sugar. 80 grams of eggs. Okay, so that's 2 small eggs. And then 2 small egg yolks. 10 grams of salt, that's 2 teaspoons. And 40 grams of olive oil. Now, I must admit, I haven't tried this recipe yet. I'm just sharing her recipe. So I haven't worked out what the 160 grams would be, or the 40 grams, but you need a little kitchen scale so that you get it absolutely perfectly, because she believes baking is a scientific art. So we are going to make Lizzie's kitka, or challah recipe. She says she also likes a little bit of flour for dusting afterwards, and she whisks 1 egg with a pinch of salt for the egg wash, and then you'll need seeds or whatever you like to decorate it with. I like to decorate it with onions or sesame seeds or whatever. So you need to take, sift 400 grams of flour into the bowl of an electric mixer and add the yeast. Okay, so you can get a 500 gram packet if you want to. Of course, you can double up on this, but this is the recipe that she has shared with us, and it is 400 grams of sifted flour into the bowl of an electric mixer, and then you add the yeast. Then you add the water. So you don't have to make a starter dough for this. So you just add the water because it's in instant yeast. Put the flour in, followed by the yeast, add the water, the sugar, the eggs, the yolks, and the salt. Always remember to add the salt last because salt retards the yeast and doesn't allow it to grow, and sugar actually makes the yeast grow. And you sort of roughly mix it together by hand or with a wooden spoon into a sort of shaggy kind of mass, as she says. And then you mix it on low speed using the dough hook attachment. 5 minutes, scrape down the sides of the bowl and the hook, and you change to medium speed for another 5 minutes until the dough becomes smooth and stretchy. So I'm happy that she actually also uses her dough hook, as I do. And then you have to add the remaining 100 grams of flour and the olive oil. And you knead it on low speed for about a minute, then on medium speed. And you scrape down the sides of the bowl and you cover it with a cloth. And you leave the dough to rise for an hour at room temperature. Then you tip the dough after an hour onto a floured working surface, flatten firmly, and fold the four sides over the center one at a time to form one large tight ball. Place it back into the bowl. Seam side down, cover with a cloth, and leave it to rise for another 45 minutes. Then you tip the dough out again onto a lightly floured surface, and you divide it into 9 portions. You'll need your scale again because it should be about 100 grams each. And you roll them into balls. Now, if you could see me now, you'd understand what I was talking about because I'm holding my hand into like a claw type of thing, and you work the dough round until it sort of rises up into the palm of your hand. And you leave the balls to rest on the board for about 30 minutes. And then what you do is you roll each ball out on the board until you get sort of like long 30 centimeter strips of dough, and you braid your kitka just as you would braid normal hair, okay? You just braid it. Or you do whatever you like to do with your challah. And then you put it onto a baking tray lined with a silicone sheet, or you can use baking powder. And you egg wash the kitka using a pastry brush and just loosely cover it with plastic. And then you leave it to proof for about an hour at room temperature like this. Then you re-egg wash it, and you preheat the oven to 200 degrees. And then you, as I say, you let it rise, and you paint it again. And this is when you put the seeds on, and you place the baking tray on the lower third shelf of the oven to allow for air circulation during baking. And you drop the temperature when they are in the oven to 160, and you bake the three for 20 minutes. And then you remove the kitka, so it's a quick baking time, but remember it is quite high heat. And then you remove it and place it onto a wire rack, and you allow it to cool. And there you have beautiful challah made by Lisi Mulder of Ildepine. So I hope that you've got some nice recipes to get started on, between the breakfast recipes and the burger recipes and the sauces and the challah. And you should have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos with all these exciting ideas. Until next time, thank you for joining me. It's been lovely having you all back. And remember, it's the eat and meat that makes this show complete.